A lot has happened in our world since I thought I put my sermon to rest. And I've realized in the last few days that I probably need for you to preach to me more than I need to preach to you. So together, we're going to do it today, okay? Look in your bulletin. I'm going to raise the question throughout my sermon several times, and then I need for you to preach back to me. Let's begin that way. Do we believe that at the darkest and most exhausting places in our lives, there will be strength and peace enough to see us through? I have started and stopped this sermon too many times to count. What does it say to any faith community when their proclaimer of good news stands before them to admit that she is often consumed with anxiety, troubled by doubt, and sometimes debilitated by fear? It doesn't take much these days for fear specifically to reach out and take hold of me. If Lloyd is late, I wonder if an accident has occurred. If I don't hear from David, I search the news for some crazed terrorist gone rampant in New York City. If Dan goes radio silent, which is not hard for him to do, I fear that he has succumbed to some latent germ that he got on his trip to India that will come to life and consume his. Because my fear is often irrational and out of control, I find that there are days when I simply cannot absorb the news of the day. Our world has become an unpredictable place of sophisticated fear. Daily events seem to feed its appetite. So we have good reason to be afraid, and our fears are many. Fear of death, fear of life, fear of the outsider, fear of the alien, fear of anyone who is different for whatever reason. Fear of cancer, fear of crime, fear prompted by the fall's upcoming elections, fear of North Korea's missiles, fear of white supremacists in states of emergency as seen in Virginia just this weekend. Fear of failure, fear of new school starts, different teachers, different students, fear we will lose our job, fear that we will stay stuck in the same old job, fear that she will not say yes, fear that he will say no, fear that money will not last to the next payday, much less last through retirement. In face of these things, whistling a tune or listing our favorite things hardly feels sufficient. Fear raises questions in our souls like, do we believe that at the darkest and most exhausting places in our lives, there will be strength and peace enough to see us through? Our texts provide two examples. The summer we began. We began with Abraham and Sarah. They gave birth to Isaac. Isaac marries Rebecca, who gives birth to twins, Esau, Jacob. Jacob, after stealing his brother's inheritance, marries Leah by trickery and Rachel by love. Leah gives birth to many sons, and Rachel, as has been true of all the other matriarchs, is barren until at last she gives birth to Jacob and to Benjamin. Joseph and Benjamin. And Jacob, though, loves these two sons better than all the rest because their mother was Rachel. Now, Joseph in particular is set apart as the favorite when his father has a special coat made for him. It's long, it has sleeves, it is a technicolored dream coat. You see, Joseph is prone to dreaming. He dreams of how his brothers will bow down to him as his status becomes even more elevated. But these dreams do nothing to create esteem for Joseph in the eyes of his older brothers who are out in the fields taking care of the flocks as he, Joseph, is sent to be his father's spy on his older brothers. So their sibling rivalry broods and brews. But it comes to its peak when they see their Joseph, their brother, approaching their field. They quickly devise a plan to grab him, remove his coat, throw him into a cistern. The original thought is, we'll kill him. But then they decide better of it. We'll just sell him as a slave to the Ishmaelites and they'll take him off to Egypt. And we know that this story is eventually going to have a lovely ending, but at this point, without the rest of the story told as of yet, the text places us in that pit right beside Joseph. He is stripped of his favored status. His future is uncertain. His relationships in shambles. He is shamed for pursuing the mystical meanings of his dreams. His father is absent and his God is not even mentioned. What was it like for Joseph in that dark, deep, dank cistern? What is it like for any of us in the dark, exhausting places of our lives? Do we believe God is with us? Or do we wonder if there will be strength and peace enough to see us through? Then there are the disciples, saddened, perhaps frightened by the news of John the Baptist's death and how it will affect their own future. They are worn out from a day's worth of intense ministry with the masses, and then Jesus insists that they leave him. He's going to take charge of dismissing the crowds. He's going to take care of cleaning up because he is hopeful that rowing and fishing and resting on the opposite shore will be just the thing to restore the spirits of these experienced fishermen. They had, after all, spent most of their lives on the sea. And sometimes when we are weary with fear, to revisit what is familiar to us brings comfort. So Jesus sends them ahead, and he chooses to stay behind. Praying is what will bolster his spirit, and so he prays alone in that lonely place. But while Jesus is praying, the disciples are caught in a storm. The wind whips up, the waves so large they beat against the boat. With the wind against them, all their misunderstandings of the sea is chaotic, and the home of demons rises to haunt them. It is these underlying primitive thoughts that have them thinking that Jesus is a ghost. For after all, how many times have we seen a man or a woman walk on water? I preached this text in Cuba and I remember it vividly. I exaggerated the wind. I exaggerated the waves. But they are all fishermen. And so they all knew what it felt like to be a very small boat tossed about on a big and deep sea. They are also Christians who know how it feels to play their lives in small ways in the face of an oppressive government. They knew the story. They knew it well enough that translation was at a minimum. They knew because they have been terrified. Terrified and filled with fear. Who among us has not been terrified when the axis of our world tilts and our direction is unsure? With the wind against us, it takes enormous amounts of energy to just stay afloat and not lose ground. At those dark and exhausting places, do we believe that there is strength and peace enough to see us through? Now, it's only Matthew's gospel that mentions Peter. Peter is the disciple who seems to always take a risk. He rushes into things and speaks what the others think but would never dare to say. He makes great leaps of faith and stumbles so often that we find him spending inordinate amounts of time brushing himself off so that he can get up to try again. Peter's great big heart is worn on his sleeve. He speaks openly about his love for and devotion to Jesus, but then he denies knowing Jesus totally. He is full of faith one minute and full of doubt the next. He richly deserves Jesus' judgment, but just like you and me, he only receives Jesus' love and grace. So in the midst of the storm, wanting to disprove the ghost theory so that he can prove the Jesus theory, Peter asked permission to walk out on the water to Jesus. Instinctively, before we read another word, we know what's going to happen next. We know because we too have stepped out full of courage to speak about the convictions of our heart, and with every negative reaction, it becomes easier to submit to fear and to silence our voice. Or maybe we have struck out bravely to follow a new course with our lives only to find that we lose our confidence with the first signs of a storm and we sink back into those dark patterns that feel oh so familiar. Or maybe we take a few hesitant steps towards a noble goal, meeting success. We are overconfident and it causes a few missteps and before we know it, we are up to our necks in water. We feel like Houdini, with our hands and feet bound, locked in a trunk with no key, no air, no freedom, no hope for tomorrow. And so we sink. We sink. We sink. But also like Peter, we have the privilege of calling out, Lord, save us. That's when the hands of love reach out faithfully to bring us to safety. Now, I want you to imagine with me, what if the story read differently? What if Peter did not sink and he walked right across that water? What if he had jumped out of the boat with perfect confidence in place, landed splat with both feet on the top of the water, smiled and waved at Jesus, and ran right to him without a moment's hesitation? What if the other disciples followed suit? We can imagine them, can't we, piling out of the boat after Peter and all of them with perfect faith, romp on the waves while the storm is raging, the wind is beating against the sails, and lightning splitting the dark wide open above their heads. Now, that would really be a different story. That would really be a different story if it had happened that way. It would be a story full of superheroes. It would be a story about those who can walk on water and change the lives of others eternally for good without one bit of help. Without one bit of help. Without one bit of help. Would there be any need for Jesus? Without one bit of help, would there be any need for a Savior? I'm thankful that Peter sinks as the ordinary disciple that he is. That Peter is at the same time full of faith and doubt, courage and fear, confidence and insecurity. I'm thankful for that because it gives me assurance and I hope it gives you some too. For when Peter sinks, I know I can forgive myself for all the times I have stepped out with bravado only to tread water. When Peter sinks, I can understand that my doubts are not mutually exclusive from my faith. When Peter sinks, I realize that faith is not the absence of fear. Rather, faith is the courage to walk through the fear. When Peter sinks, I am no longer ashamed to give voice to my fear of the chaos by praying with confidence, Lord, save me. When Peter sinks, I have the confidence to follow Jesus, who offers his hand, who lends his courage, who possesses the hope that we will use the kingdom resources available to us to change lives eternally for the good. Oh, when Peter sinks, I know the answer to that question. Do we believe at our darkest and most exhausting places that there is strength and peace enough to see us through? I cannot speak for you, so I will speak for myself. I know I want to walk on water, even with its dangers, even with my battles of faith and doubt. I want to step out on faith that we can do remarkable things with the resources we possess to alleviate fear and to bring about the salvation of people we meet right here on this corner of God's kingdom, as well as around the world. I know these things because Jesus tells us there is nothing to fear. I know these things because Jesus saves us from the chaotic waters by being present with us. I know this because Jesus responds when we cry for help every single time. So perhaps, like Peter, you fear that you are sinking. If that is the case, call on the Lord to save you, and he will. And not only will he save you, he will bring you to this boat, where it will be our privilege to grab you by the scruff of your neck and haul you in and love you in this place of shelter that holds secure against any storm. All we have to do is ask for his help. So do you believe that at our darkest and our most exhausting places, there is strength and peace enough to see us through? Then respond to the good news of the gospel as we stand to sing Precious Lord, number 834.